Hello and welcome to Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. This is episode number 17, and this will be part one of a two-part episode talking about giant skeletons, burial mounds, and what we found investigating some of the newspaper archives of Oregon. And we found that there's a treasure trove of information out there in every state that's been digitally archived, newspapers from as far back as the 1870s or even earlier in some cases, that you can now search digitally for keywords. And we're going to tell you about some of the amazing things that Neo found just looking up the terms giant skeletons just in Oregon. And we were absolutely amazed how much information we had never heard about some of the archaeological discoveries in our state of Oregon. And just doing a little investigation in other states, it seems that every state has the same story. This discovery of giant skeletons in burial mounds all across the U.S., in the late 1800s and early 1900s. This seemed to be like a common occurrence all across our country. And the way that these are sometimes put in newspapers, it's almost like an afterthought. It's not even on the front page or a big story. It's just a little side story talking about, hey, they found a 15-foot giant skeleton, while plowing a field. And then time and time again, the Smithsonian Institute is called and the bones are hauled off, never to be seen again. And this is the same repeated pattern through numerous stories. You see the Smithsonian Institute coming in and supposedly that specialists were going to archive these things, and yet none of these seem to ever be found. And that seems to be the repetitive pattern, is the Smithsonian comes in, takes the bones, and then they're never to be seen again. And so the Smithsonian Institute must just have a huge warehouse of giant bones. I mean, according to all these stories, they've picked up hundreds and hundreds of giant skeletons. So there's just a lot of information yet to be discovered. And I think it's up to us to actually go into these archives, look up some of these keywords, and do some digging in your own state. And Neo's actually creating a Facebook page that's going to be old newspaper archives and unusual stories that can be found. And just because these newspapers have been put on microfilm on the internet doesn't mean everyone has read every single line or investigated every story that's on there. Unless someone's gone to the work of going and looking up these particular keywords, it's not going to be shown. So people have the opportunity of actually discovering some brand new information, and we want to create a page where people can go and share these stories of what they found in their own states. And hopefully we can maybe discover some new things. And it doesn't have to be just about giants and skeletons and burial mounds. We're looking for anything unusual, odd, anything that, buried treasure, unusual stories, UFOs, just the paranormal, anything that would be fascinating for our listeners, we think would be something worth looking into. So if you have the time, go into your state's newspaper archives and the digital databases they have available. A lot of them are free and available to look at. There's also another thing we talk about is the fact that not everything is online. A lot of this information actually is in libraries, local museums, and schools and colleges of any particular local digs or archaeological excavations that may have been going on early in the turn of the century. So oftentimes it takes a person out there and physically asking someone, hey, do you have any journals? Do you have any old archives on the early settlers of this area? And just, really physically going out there and doing that work and collecting that data. So that's what we're kind of putting the call out to do. And we hope that this will inspire our listeners to do the same. And we hope that you guys can share this information on Facebook. Go look up Destiny Lab or Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo, and you can find us from there. We really appreciate your ongoing support with Destiny Lab and our Truth Music. It's really been a blessing to get all the orders coming through with that. If you haven't gotten our CDs or downloaded our music, this is a perfect time of year. Currently, you can get all three of our CDs for only $25. That's 54 songs. We have like 17, 18 songs on each CD. So you're definitely getting your money's worth. And we, again, appreciate your guys' support and all of your messages and insight. And we really do appreciate hearing back from you guys. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at destinylab@gmail.com. So here we go with our podcast, part one of two, what we found digging into the old newspaper archives of Oregon. We hope you enjoy. God bless.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. Tonight we're going to dig back into the whole mystery of the giants, and this time a little bit closer to home. Neo is doing a little bit more of investigating within some old newspaper articles and just kind of doing some research and found a whole bunch of really fascinating old clippings that we were going to go through and thought you guys might find these interesting as well. So how you doing tonight, Neo?
Hey, doing great. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I was browsing through the TV and I saw a new show on History Channel was about the Lost Giants. And it's a new series about a couple of brothers that are looking for giant remains back in the East Coast.
Yeah.
And they kind of mentioned offhand about a story of a giant skeleton that was found near Salem, Oregon. That's very close to where I live now. And so I said, man, I've never heard of that. I gotta do a little research and see if I can figure out what that was, what it's talking about. So I went into the archives of the Oregon newspapers and I was startled to discover that there's dozens of stories in these newspapers about giant bones, giant skeletons, and just all kinds of different oddities.
Yeah.
And so I'm very interesting and, you know, with lots of detail put in there. These are not fantasies. These are eyewitness reports of what people have found.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, you know, if those who have followed the whole story of the giants and mound builders and ancient American discoveries know that a lot of these stories of the mound builders are more back east. And you'll see these, you know, similar ideas of these, you know, these bones or evidence of things found with hieroglyphs or stories of redhead giants, six-fingered giants with double rows of teeth or whatever. But it seems it's been corroborated all throughout the whole U.S., you know, even in, you know, way out here in Oregon. So that's really fascinating how it's, you know, all these different people that are unrelated. I got to remember as well, back then they didn't have the internet, you know, so they weren't out there, you know, getting together and conspiring all these stories behind the scenes or whatever. I mean, this is something that was just being reported like any other news story in the newspaper.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, and what's interesting in Oregon is that as you go along, one of the big interstates between Salem and Eugene, there's all kinds of strange structures that I've kind of noticed that, man, those look like, you know, structures. They almost look like they're pyramids. And I was talking with a guy and he says, yeah, that's what, and he thinks that they are pyramids as well. He thought the same thing because they're just, you know, come up out of the ground. They're all covered with brush and trees now, but I've thought that for a long time. And it comes in one of these stories, it talks about a bunch of Indian mounds that are along a little tiny river called the Calapooya.
Yeah.
And there's 30 to 40 of them that have been found. And this is like 10 miles from my house.
Hmm.
So interesting that I may have to make a little trek out there and see if what I can find, because I don't think there's much going on now. Most of the discoveries were found back in the 1920s by a guy named Dr. Horner.
Huh. But, yeah, time for a road trip.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Yeah. Pretty awesome. But
that'd be great. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have, you know, you think nowadays, oh, everything's been found that has been, you know, that could be found. They've already discovered everything that of any ancient origin. And so people just don't really – I don't think there's a lot of people out there looking, not to mention they've just put, you know, such control over any type of digging or any type of excavation or archaeological evidence of any kind. You know, it's very controlled.
Well, let's go over the first story that I found. It was from the Sunday Oregonian from March 13th, 1910. And just by the way, you guys could, our listeners could look for on your local newspapers as well. Most newspapers, I just looked up Oregon Newspaper Archive, and I found a site that allows you to search for text, and I just put in a couple of keywords. I put in giant skeleton. That's all I put in, and it brought up all these different results, and this is the first story I came about.
Now, what was that website? What was that website again?
Well, I did an internet search. I don't know if I can remember the site. I could probably find it again, but I think it was from the...
So it's just old newspapers.
Yeah, I think it was the Oregon State University site, and they just are able to, in their library services, they scan old newspapers, and they must use, you know, OCR, optical character recognition scanners, and you can get it in PDF version, you can... get it in text version, and they have them all the way back to the 1870s.
Yeah.
So it goes back a long ways.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, this first story is titled Prehistoric Man's Bones Are Found, a skeleton 10 feet long discovered in a southern Idaho cave. And it also says part of a gun also taken, which is pretty strange. And it goes on to say members of a hunting party making strange find cannot identify a rusty barrel among known firearms. So anyway, this is from Boise, Idaho in March 12th. And it goes on. I'll just go ahead and read the story. I think that might be the best way to do it. So it says unmoved, unseen, and untouched for hundreds of years, and hidden in the recesses of a deep cave 25 miles north of Shoshone, Lincoln County in southern Idaho, is the skeleton of a giant 10-foot tall, evidently of prehistoric origin. It was recently discovered by a hunting party from this city. As corroborative proof, the members are now exhibiting the rusty and time-worn barrel of what appears to be an ancient gun weighing 25 and 30 pounds, resembling a flintlock rifle. This, they say, was picked up beside the skeleton. Yeah, and then it goes on. These bones will be taken out of the cave at the earliest possible date and carefully packed and forwarded to the Smithsonian Institute.
Oh, of course.
The place that somehow loses everything.
the porthole.
Yeah. It is believed by those who have seen the skeleton there will be an invasion of the caves in that section of Idaho by students seeking knowledge of the earlier inhabitants of America. And it keeps going. I mean, this is a very detailed story. It says, skull of great size. The skull of the giant is twice as large of that of the average man today. The large limb bones indicated he must have been a man of great physical power. The skeleton is well-preserved and was found upon the surface of the ground far back in the chamber of the cave. Stretched out at full length, close by was the barrel of the rusty rifle, which is of peculiar make unknown to those familiar with firearms. No reasonable theory can be advanced by the discoverers as to how the skeleton happened to be in the cave. Those who have looked into the facts believe the skeleton represents one of a lost race unknown to men of this day, which occupied the American continent long before the Redskins came. Geologists say the Western County was the scene of a great volcanic disturbance at one time, and great streams of lava overflowed the now fertile plains of this state, forming caves and great natural basins. It is possible that this one representative of a lost race was caught by the flows and sealed up in the cave in which he was found.
Wow. That's yeah. Weird.
I mean, that's just amazing, you know? And
well, it's like if you're going to make up a story, you want to make it as convincing as possible. And the fact that they found this unknown thing that looked like a firearm next to it, you know, if you're going to make it up of, and you're saying, they're claiming it's hundreds of years old, not like something that was just, you know, somebody that got lost in a cave with a gun. You know, they're claiming this gun doesn't look like any known gun of any kind, or even maybe they don't even know if it's a gun or not. That's just what they,
the closest
thing they thought it could have been, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, it said it was, I don't know a lot about the weight of guns. They said the gun weighed 30 pounds. I mean, do guns weigh 30 pounds?
That's pretty heavy.
You know? Yeah, that seems pretty heavy to me, too.
Yeah. Well, so, and I'm sure a lot of it is maybe even worn off. I mean, I don't know if it had any wooden parts that had eroded or anything else, but I wonder if there was any, and there was no metal or anything like that, or jewelry or anything found on him. It doesn't say, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it was, you know, there was other stories that were like this, like, you know, maybe someone can look in the Idaho papers and maybe there's somebody from, Boise, and it was, they had more detailed reports in their newspaper.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is from the Portland, Oregon, which is, you know, 300 miles away.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I mean, I'm only, you know, an hour from Boise myself, so.
Road
trip.
Oh, yeah. Now, here's another just interesting thing that I came across. This is from November 21st, 1889. This is a really old story, and it's talking about Inez Pierce Papoose. So that means a young girl. And she was a one-eyed girl, and the eye was situated in the center of her forehead. And this is the story about this. It says, not long ago, there was seen in Pendleton a human freak which knocks the spots off any living skeleton or Chinese giant as a natural curiosity. It was an Indian child of the Nez Perce tribe with but one eye, situated in the center of its forehead like those of the fabled Cyclops. The child was able to see with ease and ran about with as much freedom as any of it, of its two-eyed companions. Two or three parties here were on the point of entering into negotiations to secure the freak when the Indians, who were bound on a hunting excursion, left for the mountains. So you can see, I mean, this they're speaking as if, you know, this is, again, from the 1880s. So this is a long, long time ago when this
before
happened.
Before the days of political correctness.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's why they're speaking in this type of manner. So we're just reading it right from the newspaper. But, you know, that, again, seems like an oddity that, but, you know, they're basically trying to capture this girl and put her in a circus.
Wow.
That's what they're basically saying they wanted to do. But just, again, a curious story
that
was found in there.
You know, and you look at all these stories of ancient mythology and whatnot of the Cyclops, and now we know. I mean, that these things are real things. I mean, that's a real birth defect of things being born with this Cyclops, and as well as three eyes and all other different variations of that.
Oh yeah, yep. So, yeah, that's another story. So. Third story I came about was titled Skeleton of Giant. The remains of a big Indian found in California, 7 feet, 4 inches, was the height of a member of an extinct race whose bones were dug up. And this is from August 30th, 1912 in the Oregon Mist is what they call it for the St. Helens newspaper. And this is from San Francisco, California. It says, up to about 100 years ago, which again, they knew, you know, a lot of this is lost, but just listen to the story. Up to about 100 years ago, a giant race of Indians inhabited the coast region of California.
Mm-hmm.
Remains of these have been discovered in the islands of the Santa Barbara Channel. To William Altana, assistant curator of the Golden Gate Park Memorial Museum, belongs, and some of these are really hard to read because the some of the words are kind of missing slightly because the papers have been folded, and so some of them are a little hard to read. So I apologize if I stumble over some of the words, but they're pretty tough to read at times. But anyway, let's continue. Yeah. This guy William Altman, who is the curator of the Golden Gate Park Memorial Museum, belongs. He discovered one of the tallest and best preserved skeletons of this extinct tribe. Altman utilizes his vacation in excavating an old Indian burial mound on the nursery of Thomas S. Duane, 2 miles from Concord in Contra Costa County. The giant skeleton was found 10 feet from the surface, and around it were a large number of mortars and pestles, charm stones, and obsidian arrowheads.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, so lots of different things found. But, I mean, here they're saying that, you know, that it was known.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't know this, but as the white man settled in the West, diseases absolutely took out huge amounts of the Indians, and so
yeah,
lots of them died off from natural causes, and a lot of their history died, and yeah. You know that was just a tragedy that happened, that this basically the full total races of people were just died from these diseases.
Mm.
So, but it goes on to say the skeleton has not been mounted, but the bones were assembled on a table in the curator's office and placed in a private exhibition. The bones are in a good state of preservation, being hard and firm, although brown with age. Two of the three vertebrae missing, and the skull is broken into three parts. The skeleton measures 7 feet 4 inches. The tibia is 17 inches in length. The skull is in great contrast with that of the Digger Indian of the present day, being of much more intellectual type. The underjaw is square and massive, being remarkably thick and strong.
Hmm.
Either the dead Indian was of great age, or he subsisted on hard food, as shown by his molars, which are worn perfectly flat and close to the gums.
Ah.
The find is one of the greatest importance to anthropologists the world over, confirming as it does the theory advanced when the giant skeletons were unearthed in Santa Barbara Islands, that a superior race of Indians physically and mentally preceded the Digger and other native races of the present day. This is evidence also in the pestles and charm stones found near the body.
Hmm. That's fascinating.
And there's a little bit more. It talks, and then it says the former are ornamented with phallic carvings, whereas the pestles made by the former and present day diggers are not carved or ornamented in any other way. The charm stones are of baked clay, a beginning in the art of pottery making, which are not found in the Digger remains. This interesting find was made on the Salvador Pacheco Ranch, part of which is occupied by Duane's nursery. It is Altman's intention to make a further exploration of the mound at an earlier date for other relics of the bygone tribe.
Wow. That reminds me of so many other stories that are told, that the farther they go down when digging archaeological digs, sometimes the more complicated the technology gets, and they'll find, technology and know-how and artistry and carvings that are far beyond the scope of the modern day culture of that area.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, both these last stories had technology, that they couldn't be accounted for in the earlier races.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've only gone through three of them. Here's the next one. This is from the Oregon Daily Journal from January 7th, 1906. And this is titled, Giant Skeletons Are Unearthed, Burial Ground. And this is going to be really tough to read. This is a very dark. In fact, it barely found this one in the archives, because it has to read these words. And so it's going to be tough for me to read some of this to decipher it, but I'll do the best I can. It says, a burial ground of prehistoric race of big people is discovered. Bones 3 times as large as the average man. Remains covered over with a blanket of small stones to a depth of some 6 inches. Rocks of bright hue.
Mm.
And I'll do my best to read the next part. That's actually the title. So it's going to be tough to read these next part, but I'll... give him the best shot. But it's from San Jose, California, January 6th. Persons foot on horseback in buggies and carts, automobiles and wagons made a constant stream of humanity today out of the little narrow lane which leads from Keys Street Road to the clay pit of Remland Brick Company, in which has been discovered the mammoth burying grounds of a prehistoric people. Several hundred persons visited the big Indian burial ground today. It required the efforts of several employees of the brick company to keep the crowds from tearing up the ground in the vicinity of the spot in which the skeletons had been uncovered in a search for specimens. And then it goes on to say, wow. Yeah, it says small boys and a few others were allowed to dig in the banks of the big pit, but the only systematic exploration that was allowed was conducted by a party of students under the leadership and direction of W. H. Merrill and E. Lamb of Stanford University. These men succeeded after several hours in uncovering a giant skeleton, which was from its surrounding and isolation from the other skeletons was evidently that of a man of some prominence among the people of his time. As the case with all other skeletons uncovered, this one was covered over with a blanket of small stones to a depth of some 6 inches. In this case, however, the stones were of bright hue, white, pink, and reddish rocks having been picked out for the grave cap of the dead chief or whosoever he may have been. So, I mean, look at all the detail they're given. And that's what, you know, all these Smithsonian people say, oh, they're just all made up. I mean, these are eyewitness accounts giving names of professors who did these things. And now it's all gone. Yeah. Now it's all didn't happen. You know, there's a huge conspiracy to cover up all these stories. And it's just incredible that, you know, the so-called scientists would be so close-minded that they would actually bury evidence, you know, and just, you know, cover it up. It's just crazy.
Yeah, no, it is amazing. I mean, I was excited about this show as well, this new giant show. I watched the first episode and I still don't know where to stand. Because one of the things I did notice within that show is, you know, one of their so-called excerpts they brought in very prominently wore a large black Masonic ring on his hand and was one of the so-called experts about this, but none of them necessarily seemed to be coming from a biblical standpoint either.
Well, it's interesting, the very first the kind of the prelude to their show started off, and there were giants in the earth in those days, Genesis 6:4. So they started off with that, but they didn't really make the connection, but that's the History Channel.
Well, they're obviously appealing. Yeah, I mean, they're obviously appealing to people that are into giants and the Nephilim, which it's becoming a lot more mainstream. So they're definitely appealing to the fact that this stuff is out in the open, and what the conclusion they'll come to is what I'm going to be interested in finding out, because I can almost see them setting it up to be like, you know, the whole every one of the shows being about like, yeah, we thought we were going to find it. Well, but it turns out, you know, it was a big misunderstanding, and this is what actually happened, and this is what actually happened. Kind of like if you watch that America Unearthed show, you know, they would beat around the bush about a lot of things. They would insert a lot of Masonic overtones, but they would never really dig deep enough to uncover any truths, you know. They would just leave out all the real hard evidence or things that may be too controversial for most people to take, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let me finish this story. They have some more details in this. This is, again, this story that was found at the brick factory, and hundreds of people saw this. They were all looking through there, finding this thing, and it talks about the bones of Jesus. The bones of the skeletons were much larger than that of the ordinary man, and indicated that the person in life was a veritable giant. For instance, the bones of the fingers found in the fair state of preservation were almost three times as large as in the hand bone of the average mortal.
Mm. Wow.
Perhaps, yeah, I mean, you know, they're giving measurements, you know, this huge human being. Perhaps the most important discovery made outside of the skeletons themselves was that of Alfred Bowen, the chief blacksmith and employee of the brick company. Bowen with the aid of his fellow employees, uncovered a plot of ground some feet in extent and laid bare what had evidently been the scene of a barbecue or feast. The remains of what had been a great campfire were found. Nearby were the bones of several, and I don't know what this, beavers? I don't know what this
is. Beeves?
Beeves, whatever beeves is. And a number of stone utensils. Superintendent Charles Simard of the Rimald Brick Company is lending assistance to those who desire to make exploration of the burial ground in the intent of science, but will not permit the idle digging up of the bones and other relics. Simard has at his office the stone mortars, pestles, and other relics excavated so far. Nearly all of the bones taken out since the discovery of the burial mound have been carried off as relics by the seeker of such gruesome things. So basically people just, took it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, back then it was kind of a free-for-all. There's a lot of freak shows going on and, like you said, circuses and sideshows. And
when
you hear these stories of giant bones that were shown in some of these sideshows, you wonder how much of that is, you know, actual real relics possibly.
Oh, yeah. Now, you got to remember that evolution was huge back then. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, they thought they were intellectual for believing in evolution, kind of like today. You know, somehow people think that a rock came alive and here we are from a rock.
Yeah.
Totally ridiculous and unscientific to think that a rock could come alive.
Yeah.
Random chance, you know. Take the rock science, smartest guy in the world, make it alive. Just try to do it. No one's ever done it, and they think it can happen by chance. I don't think so. But anyway, here kind of shows how here's some evidence of a giant horse in this next story that kind of overthrows the evolutionary theory. So this is from the Oregon Daily Journal from August 3rd, 1906, and it says a giant horse at Lander, Wyoming, the fossilized skeleton of this giant horse has been discovered in Big Sweetwater Divide fossil beds. The discovery overthrows the accepted theory that the horse was evolved from a small animal. This skeleton is 30 feet long and fully as tall and is in excellent state of preservation.
Wow.
It was a herbivorous animal, and the jawbone displays powerful grinders, which are but little decayed. So again, here's an animal that is well preserved. You can see the teeth and the jawbones of it. And this is back when they didn't think that evolution took so long. You know, they have added time to the evolutionary theory.
Yeah.
Because they knew it. So anytime something is well preserved, they kind of hide it as well. So here's another evidence of a well-preserved so-called prehistoric animal that's probably only a few thousand years old.
Well, and people knew what a horse skeleton looks like, you know, so it's not like they were confused by what it was, and which is another common misconception and lie spread by, places like the Smithsonian, where they'll say, oh, these people were just finding, you know, giant bones of dinosaurs, and they didn't know what they were finding. You know, they thought they were finding cyclopses, and it was actually just, you know, giant mammoth bones. They didn't realize, you know, it's like people were not that stupid, and they weren't just reporting the skulls of things in the previous story before. They were actually measuring, you know, tibias and fibias and hand bones and finger bones. And I mean, people were not stupid to the point of just like not even understanding what bones were. I mean, they were very familiar with bones at that time.
In fact, they were much more scholarly than we are today because they had to spend so much time reading.
That's
and
true.
Performing experiments on their own. They couldn't rely on someone else to do it for them and just use their work. Today, so many scientists rely on others to formulate their own opinions on things because information is so easily obtained now. But back then, you had to find out on your own.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, it's compartmentalized all the information. So you can only study a certain specific type of study, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you want to find out new information, you have to go ask a whole other department. So yep. It creates this circular reasoning where each group thinks they've figured it out. And they're trusting the other group has got more information than they do.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And they're all wrong.
Yeah.
Now, I thought this next one was real interesting. This is from the Eugene City Guard from September 1st, 1883. And this story is retelling a story from what's called the London Tidbits. And it's basically a list of notable men and women of great stature.
Hmm.
So this is all things that have been passed on. Somebody apparently had a list of all these. So I'll just kind of read through a few of these. So Samuel MacDonald was a Scotchman named Big Sam, and he was 6 feet 10 inches in height, and was the footman to Prince of Wales, and died in 1802. Alice Gordon of Essex, England, was a giantess 7 feet long, and she died in 1737. Anne Hanan Swan of Nova Scotia was 7 feet. LaPierre of Stratsgaard in Denmark was 7 feet 1 inch. Henry Blacker, 7 feet 4 inches, and most symmetrical. Born at Cuckfield in Sussex in 1724, and generally called the British Giant, and was exhibited in London in 1751. So again, there's people this tall today too, but it's just kind of interesting to go through some of these things. Let's see what else they got. It says Louis Friends, a Frenchman with 7 feet 4 inches. His left hand is preserved in the Museum of the College of Surgeons in London. Porus, an Indian king, who fought against Alexander near the river Hydaspes in BC 327, was 7 feet and a half tall, so 7 feet 6, with strength in proportion. Henrik Austin, born in Norway, is 7 feet 6 inches, weight 300 pounds or 15 stones. So, you know, there's guys, you know, that this big today. But for that time, when the average person was you know, 5 foot 2, these are pretty big dudes. So
it's interesting that the porous one, the Indian king one, was a king, you know, because oftentimes you wonder if there were actual remnants of the Nephilim bloodline that were possibly still around, that were interbreeding with the higher ups or elitist class.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Here's another instance. It's because Joseph Rice was 7 feet 8 inches at the age of 26 years. He was exhibited in London. His hand could span 15 and a half inches, and he was born at Ramonchamp in the Vosges, France, in 1840. He was sometimes called Anak, which is a biblical name for a giant, the Anakites.
That's weird.
So I thought that was an interesting one as well. Here's one. Joaquin Eliscu, a Spanish giant, 7 feet 10 inches, just exhibited in London. And here's all these exhibited in London, you know. So Captain Bates, Kentucky, 7 feet 11 and 1 1/2 inches, exhibited in London in 1871 again. Harald Hardra, a Norwegian giant, nearly 8 feet. Gilly, a Swede, 8 foot tall. So again, they're getting taller as we go up. So I guess the biggest ones are coming in. Here's William Evans, 8 feet at death. Charlemagne, nearly 8 feet tall. He could squeeze together 3 horseshoes at once in his hand. So again, showing that his strength, because that's one of the things that they always say, these guys that have gigantism are very weak. Well, Charlemagne, you know, to squeeze 3 horseshoes together. I mean,
yeah,
there's not many guys that can squeeze 1 horseshoe together in their hands.
Yeah, really.
Man. There's another one. Jay Toller of Nova Scotia, 8 feet, died in 1819.
Hmm.
Maximilian Christopher Miller, 8 feet. His hand measured 12 inches and his forefinger was 9 inches long. And he was called the Saxon Giant. And he died in London in 1674. Here's a Chinese giant, Chang Wugu of Taichung, China. It was 8 feet 2 inches tall and exhibited in London in 1880.
Exhibited.
Wonder what exhibited means.
Like they're animals.
Yeah, you know.
Well, I think, you know, for a lot of these people, this was a definitely an accepted way of making a living. Anybody that had an unusual characteristic oftentimes was looked at as like a movie star back then. I mean, these people were super famous people, you know. We've been told when we were growing up, I know that we were told we were related to Tom Thumb in some way. I don't know if you remember that, but Mom would always tell us, or Mom would tell us that we were in some way in her side of the family was her relatives were related to Tom Thumb. And what's kind of sad is that I've seen a couple of documentaries on, there's one about these Siamese twins that were connected, that were basically cast aside at the time they were born. Their mom abandoned them, and so this lady who is really rich and wanted to make money off them took them in and from the very young age groomed them to be sideshow freaks, you know, teaching them how to sing and dance and play instruments.
Oh, wow.
Because oftentimes these sideshow freaks would have to be trained performers as well. They couldn't just stand there or sit there. They made them do something. So they would have some sort of talent, whether it was singing or dancing or swallowing swords or whatever. I mean, they learned some sort of unusual feat as well. So, and it was kind of sad because it's, you know, it became kind of out of style at some point where it wasn't as accepted.
Oh yeah.
And these ladies were living into the 1950s and they were the stars in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the time they died, they were completely destitute, working at a grocery store as a bagger and a clerk or something.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting is that with genetics, that some genetic traits will pop up, you know, several generations, after the a giant. So some of these stories, especially as you go back, they seem to be getting taller, that there might be, you know, remnants of Nephilim DNA, Nephilim blood.
Yeah.
And, you know, for instance, this story is kind of interesting. It was this guy named Jay Reichert of Fridberg, Sweden. He was 8 feet 3 inches, and both his mother and father were giants as well. So they were all tall. And then this other guy, Charles O'Brien, of Brian, he was an Irish giant. He's 8 foot 4, and his skeleton is preserved at a museum of the College of Surgeons. And it says Patrick, his brother, was 8 feet 7 inches. So here we've got a more accounts telling that these skeletons are on display and somehow they're all gone, you know, which again is just is crazy. You know, here's another one, a human skeleton, 8 feet, 6 inches, preserved at the Museum of Trinity in Dublin. So another giant skeleton. So they just keep going, you know, farther and farther on all these different things, which is
really interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, there's all kinds of different things that, you know, talk about all these skeletons. So here's another one. If we go up to the Oregon Courier again, this is talking about this is March 23rd, 1894, talking about the Red Rock Caverns. And I'm not sure where this is exactly at, but I think it's in France, in Menton, was recently found some Neolithic skeletons of a giant man. And it says, and they are still painted, and almost equally interesting discoveries are made in a deep railway cutting at Adressi in the Seine et Oise near Paris, where the merchant ran upon a huge, and this is interesting, Merovingian cemetery of the 6th century.
Mm.
So if you know about anything about the Merovingians,
yeah,
and their claim to blood.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I thought this story was But anyway, they uncovered nearly 600 tombs extending over an area of 2.5 miles. And this is in old English. This is a really old story. Yielding a hitherto unheard of mass of carved sarcophagi, knives, spears, vases, ornaments, and pottery of unique shapes and styles of decoration. It is recalled how that the tiny hamlet of Audrecy in the generation succeeding the introduction of Christianity by Guinevere and Clovis was an important missionary center. The expected scientific examination of these multitudes of remains will throw a flood of light on the origins of the church among all the ranks. So I'm not sure exactly what that's pertaining to, but they apparently in this place found some giant skeletons and a lot of other dead bodies in this Merovingian cemetery in France.
And yet it's all gone now.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some of the stories in here are, you know, almost too fantastic to even come to account of, you know, giants that are just humongous sizes that you can hardly even believe. But some of them are from eyewitness reports.
Yeah.
So that's going to do it for tonight's episode, part 1 of 2. So be sure and tune in for the second episode where we go in even deeper into what we exactly found into these archives and possible future road trips and field trips that we're going to take on site, and as well share with you how you can look into your local state's archives and do some investigating of your own. And we're going to close out with a song by Destiny Lab. This song is appropriately called Dig, off our album The Original Sin, available at destinylab.com. Thank you for joining us. Good night and God bless.
Evolution teaches that bacteria were one of the first life forms to evolve from chemicals. Many bacteria propel themselves with a type of miniature motor called a flagellum. These extremely efficient reversible motors rotate up to 100,000 revolutions per minute. While bacteria are small, they are not simple.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
This could change the course of human history.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
This could change the course of human history.
Have you heard of the flagellum? A natural engine powered by a proton medium. It's a motorized bacterium that rotates up to 100,000 RPM. That's rotations per minute, and it can instantly reverse. We make nothing equivalent. 1/1000th of an inch in diameter. Everything man-made is inferior to the superior technology. See the handiwork of God in molecular biology. Irreducibly complex. If any one part's removed, it would not exist. Analogous to a mousetrap, it cannot snap without corresponding parts that react. No transition could survive transformation. Mutations gain no genetic information.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
This could change the course of human history.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
This could change the course of human history.
Speak the language of genetic code. Explore the program sequence of the human genome. More impressive and perplexing than expected. Like hieroglyphics read by a dyslexic. Can we understand the brain's inner dynamics? Train a dog to be an auto mechanic. Because that's a good analogy. Never begin to imagine all the depths of his majesty. Created instantly and magically. Through what is made we examine divine ingenuity. From the hands of the Most High. From the land to the sea to the ends of the skies. It boggles minds what cannot be seen with the naked eye. Like the gyroscopes in a housefly. Let's biomimic these agilities. And make a jet plane that flies with the same capabilities.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
This could change the course of human history.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
This could change the course of human history.
Read my DNA.
DNA sequence. If you can and you understand, I'm programmed to bring this. Take a trip inside my helix. As I guide you, we spiral to this beat from genetics. Taking your brain like the surface of a gecko foot. We reverberate and pulsate like an echo would. Predestinated protoplasm. Breathing bionics, atomic particles vibrate in spasm. Harness the power of electrons. To microscope out the proof, analyze like Jimmy Neutron. Curious, homo sapien. Observe this world through the eyes of an alien. Moving like robotic automatons. Designed like Robotron. We are mechanical phenomenons.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
This can change the course of human history.
Dig to reveal the roots of technology. Dig to separate truth from mythology. Dig to unveil a modern day mystery.
If you have a complex, multi-part biochemical machine, the argument is that evolution can't produce it because the individual parts have no function of their own. That's what irreducible complexity means. So natural selection can't make this, doesn't have any function. Can't make that, therefore you can't evolve a structure.